With that, let's give a big round of applause for the team at Improvata and the presentation we're going to have right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. I'm so excited to be here and talk to you about the journey that we had going in towards ABM, and particularly some of the learning elements, and share those with you. So as you go towards your journey and implementing ABM, you can keep those in mind and leverage some of the learning things that we had along that journey. So I'm going to skip this slide. Mark did an excellent job in introducing us. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the company, but I think there's two things I want you to take away from this slide. One is we sell pretty much exclusively in towards healthcare. So this is hospitals, maybe some larger clinics, and IDNs, integrated delivery networks, which are conglomerates of hospitals. And then two, we have a fairly significant market share there already, somewhere between 40 and 50%. So very specific and very defined market that we're going after. And the rest I will be happy to talk about, but that's not for the scope of this presentation. So when about 2 years, 3 years ago, we were looking towards ABM, and we were listening towards all these vendors with big promises about ABM, and this felt really exciting. And particularly as we were changing our organization and much more targeted towards this healthcare industry, and one promise of a vendor was better than another promise. So as marketeers, we were all thinking, well, this is great. We need to go in towards that same journey. But then we were also looking at towards, well, can that really happen? Like reducing sales cycle and increase deal size and all of that sounds amazing, but wouldn't that all happen? Same time, at talking towards sales, they were really excited. Like, whoa, whoa, yeah, no, we love that. Increased sales cycle and faster closure and a larger deal size, more attention from marketing. That sounds great news. But then we start sharing with them, well, there's also going to be more work for you. Although it's called ABM, that doesn't mean that it's AB marketing. It's ABD marketing and sales. We need to do this together. And then, whoa, this is maybe not so exciting. If there's more work for me, we're not sure that we want to go on the journey. So working together and getting alignment with sales is a really important part of our journey, and that's what made us successful. So making sure that there is fully alignment on what are the accounts that we're going to go after, what is the strategy for those accounts, what are the personas based on the different products, the solutions that we're selling, and how do we deliver the right message towards those personas. So getting alignment on all of that has been really a very important part of that strategy. And I think we had very interesting discussions with sales during that analysis phase. This was before execution, right? So to think that through and making sure that you're all aligned, that makes you as a team between marketing and sales really powerful. And that's what's creating the 800-pound gorilla. So extremely powerful. By the way, I looked up yesterday, what's up with the 800 pounds? And according to Wikipedia, it's like there's no gorillas more than 600 pounds. So this is really different. Very strong gorilla. So what are some of the elements that we felt are really important? Collaboration with sales, and that's on all levels. It's great. I started with the SVP of sales, and obviously, Senior Vice President of Sales, obviously you need to be in agreement that you're going to implement that, because there is an entire change in the strategy that you're approaching accounts. Very important. But also the level underneath, because if you don't get their commitment, if they're like skeptical, in the end, it's not going to work, because they're going to push back during the process. Sales operations was heavily involved in this, getting a better understanding of, okay, what are the changes? How do we make sure that all the accounts are appropriately assigned and all of that? So there's a lot of work in the back end. Resources and timing. So it took us from begin to start about 3 quarters. And for you, that's really important to realize when you go in towards a journey. During those 3 quarters, we couldn't stop our engines. We couldn't say, well, let's take a break and now let's build ABM, because sales was still expected to deliver. So in order for sales to deliver, marketing still had to deliver. We had to deliver our leads. We had to make sure that there was a constant flow of leads, MQLs going in towards the sales organization. They could follow up on that. The second part here is it's really cross-functional, right? So yes, it's the IT organization, the sales organization, marketing organization, operation. We all need to work together on this, and you need to make sure that you have their commitment that over this period, they're going to work on that and implement. And for us, that worked out really well. We got their commitment, and we all worked together in order to make that happen. We had a few additional resources, contractors that also helped in building emails, for instance. But in the end, many of the people in your team and in Lynn's team and in Naomi's team had to work more hours in order to make all of this happen. If you look towards the technology infrastructure, it's so great, right? You walk around in this market place here and you see all of the different solutions and we get really excited. Oh, this is cool, that is cool. Wanna buy this, wanna buy that. And the vendors have great stories and no disrespect to them, but you need to take a step back and think about what is your own workflow? How do you want the architecture and the workflow to be in order to be successful? So that was, of course, an important part. The other important part was the following, and we're talking about automated versus manual. I knew we are a private equity-owned company that even if ABM would be wildly successful, I would never get four additional heads. It was simply not going to happen. So in order to make sure that if it was successful, it would be scalable, you need to make sure that there is a lot, you can automate a lot. You don't want to have everything manual, but obviously you need to have certain checkpoints in there. So that's a balance you need to make. And again, make sure that you first map it out, whiteboard it again before you start buying any technology in there. And then fourthly, measurement considerations. And obviously that's the focus of this presentation today. We had a lot of focus around, well, we want to look at it from an account level. And later on during presentation, Naomi will talk about how we're doing that. But I think there is also other things that you want to figure out and making that, having a, an, I think if we were to do everything all over again, that's one of the areas where we would say, okay, well, have more pressure at the beginning and make sure that we have very focused work on here is where we want to measure, that's what we want to measure, and these are the things that we want to report on during the process. So the way that we went through our journey, going from originally having the individual products, doing webinars for those, as I said, targeting those 5,000 hospitals, which was really the healthcare vertical that we were focused on, shifting that towards, okay, well, we are now doing segmentation on EMR, segmentation on geographical location. So all of that really helped in being more successful, but that was target account marketing, not account-based marketing. And going through that shift was caused by the following. So we were sending out an email with an invitation for a webinar for one of those hospitals. And then when I talked towards the sales rep, well, why didn't you invite that account for this? And this webinar is a great webinar, a lot of good content. And this account, according to our database, they don't have this solution yet. Sales rep told me, well, they're never going to buy it. I've tried for 3 years. You marketing guys, are pitching the wrong product. So they said, why? What's going on? And he said, well, they have a competitor. They're perfectly happy with that. And I have a different strategy. My strategy is to sell them another product. So that's when we realized, okay, what we are sending for marketing is not aligned with the strategy that sales has, right? So that was really our trigger to shift towards this new model where we say, okay, well, we need to change and we need to have basically listen towards the sales. What is their sales strategy? What is the account strategy? Then still use the same type of tools. We're still using webinars, emails, advertising, but be very account specific and very specific towards the buying group. So in order to be successful, what we did is asking the sales rep, well, define that for 10 to 12 accounts, define the account strategy. We will help you in providing a lot of information about the account. What do we see in terms of intent and in terms of other information, campaign participation. And then we're still doing those webinars towards the different personas, CIO, CMIO, etc., which are really important towards healthcare. Now, how we're doing that, I'm going to hand over to Lynn, and she'll be talking about that.
Thank you. I gotta make sure I know how to use this. Next. Okay, so Mark talked a little bit about the lead up to our ABM program, and I'm going to talk about the actual execution and how we went about it. So we started off with the premise that sales knows more about what's going on within the accounts that they work with than we do in marketing. So what we did was we had them outline a strategy for us, but we gave them choices for those strategies. So first, they had to select a product strategy. And that product strategy equated to a customer pain. So this product solves this pain, and that was one variable they had to choose. Second, they had to choose account strategy type. So where is this account in their journey with Improvata? Are they new to us? They don't know us. We need to broaden awareness. That was one of our strategies, is broaden awareness. Have we been working with them and we actually have a deal in pipeline and we want to advance that deal faster? That's another strategy. So broaden awareness, there was a product support promotion and deal acceleration. And then the last variable that they had to select was a driver or a lever. So what's going on within the four walls of that hospital that we can leverage to kind of drive a key message to those folks and get their attention? Because this ADD-riddled society that we live in, you've really got to hit them hard with a message that speaks to them. I don't have to tell you guys that, but... So we took these are fields in Salesforce, drop-down menus where they pick those three variables. So then we can layer in marketing, you know, if we know what EHR they're on, we can integrate that into the message. You know, how many beds, how big is the hospital? Are they a customer or not? And then we know the key personas for each deal. The anatomy of a deal has been studied, and we know who's involved in a given deal for a given product. So we take all that information and totally munge it together to get, and that's a very technical term, that involved, I will not lie, a shit ton of work figuring all this out. But we built custom messages and campaign tactics to target them in all these different ways. And then another key piece is that we have an ABM specialist whose role is to be the contact with sales. And we automated as much of this as we could because it's so overwhelming. But you've got to have some of that personal discussion too, because you know, automation can't surface some of what those key conversations give us, like what Mark was just sharing. So one of the first things we did, we worked closely with product marketing to outline the anatomy of those deals. So, you know, for Confirm ID, you know, who are the buyers in that type of sale? Who are the buyers? Who do they report to? What do they care about? Who do they have to keep happy within the hospital? So that we had a solid understanding of who we were trying to sell to and who those key personas within each account was.
Those are not turtles.
Those are not turtles. They're actually from a graphic with puzzle pieces.
Yeah, that's a Serious Decisions graphic. So
yeah.
Those are not turtles.
We call them turtles.
Yeah.
So, and this is where we land. So we have a program like this for all those different variables. So as you can see, it starts with email. And some of the things that we did to get scale out of our program, for every email that you see there, we have two different subject lines. So that if we send it and they don't open it, we can try again with a different subject line. So those 10 or so emails is actually a flow of 20. Other key pieces here, we do IP targeted banner ads. We work with Terminus on that. So we can have Terminus hook right into Salesforce, and when account strategies change, it will serve up different ads. So again, automated, huge help, because we're not a big team. We're doing all this with a pretty lean team, because Mark hasn't gotten us any more headcount. The other thing that we do is we analyze intent data. So this is where, and I forgot to make the point on a previous slide, but this is where we can actually bring to sales information that they don't have, which is always fun for a marketing person. It's kind of a validation. I know this, you don't, but We use third-party intent to be able to say, you know, we're seeing this. If a salesperson has a strategy for, say, patient secure, but all of the third-party intent is showing us that the folks in that account are searching for information about our electronic prescribing of controlled substances, EPCS, then we can share that with sales and they may choose to switch their strategy. They may also choose not to. They may say, yep, they are, but I got to hold on that deal and I want to keep moving them to the next product while I'm still talking to them about this product. So we use that intent data to be able to provide more information. That's, again, that's through the intent data is through True Influence. And then one of the other key pieces that when we first started this journey, I had no idea you could actually do is automate direct mail. So our direct mail is through PFL and it's automated into that email journey. So you'll have email one drop, email two drop, email three. Then it triggers, a webhook triggers into Salesforce to say, okay, or Marketo, to say, okay, send this email, verify their address, and then PFL sends out a direct mail for us. So we've automated a lot of this because it's so, so much. So the ABM specialist that I was talking about, she is a key, like it can't be understated the value of her role. So she will look at all the accounts, look at where they are, whether they're progressing from a deal standpoint. She'll look at that intent data. So she shares back with sales activity reports because we are giving them a lot of tools. There's a lot of data and sometimes interpretation from somebody else and sharing the insights instead of just the activity is helpful. So she shares that. She works with them on ensuring that contact records are updated. And she also works with them on managing personas. It's important for our program that we have those key personas by product in the opportunity in Salesforce. And I'll get into that a little bit more. And then she, again, shares that intent reporting. The other key piece that she does is she aligns with my programs team. So she, you know, sometimes we choose to do direct mail outside of the automated flow, you know, Q4, we want to help sales close as much as they can. So we send out something at the beginning of December to accelerate the deal. So that is outside that automated flow. So she worked with us to make sure that we were sending it to the right folks and that we had the right addresses. It's all hands-on work, and the automation piece is just a piece of it. We really need that hands-on piece. And then she'll work with sales to make sure that, you know, if it's something we've done outside the program and it's not a digital touch, that sales actually followed up. So she is critical to the whole process.
So I'm going to just interject for one slide and then go away again. But essentially, before we get into the live examples of the metrics and reports and dashboards, we wanted to give you some context for everything that's going on, right? Because one, it proves that we understand the complexities of it all and we understand that it's not easy, but we also want to show you real live examples that we use. Part of that was also acknowledging that through this journey, we stepped back, I think, and would strongly recommend that you step back from what you're currently working on, literally go into a room with a blank whiteboard and map out what you want your process to be, taking into account that you have certain organizational limitations and technology stack limitations and things. You know, there were certain applications in this stack we weren't going to rip out and replace, right? It's just the reality of the situation. But we pulled in sales operations, finance, our global operations team that deals with product fulfillment. We pulled in the marketing team, IT, our business analytics team. We all got in a room and we whiteboarded what we wanted this thing to look like, right? That helped us determine like who owns what part of the process and where are the handoffs, where do we have gaps in our technology stack, and where do we have overlap? Because a lot of our vendor partners, technology partners, have overlap in features and function. So we were able to put this diagram in front of them and have really intelligent conversations around, well, I know you guys do that, but what I really need you to focus on is this for us. And then I'm going to have somebody else do that part of the process. So this is our current tech stack. And the bullet points just basically, these are things that when we went through this entire process, we didn't necessarily understand how important they were going to be for us. For example, the campaign orchestration engine, this concept that with hyper-targeting, right, with over 180 email journeys, with you know thousands and thousands of emails and direct mail being triggered, we really needed to figure out how we were going to orchestrate those campaigns, both offline and online. And that became something that was really important. The way that activity is made visible to marketing and sales and to the ABM specialists, that's something that I think we oversimplified it in our brain in the beginning. So those bullet points are just up there kind of to say, as you're mapping out your whiteboard flow, run through this list and just be like, oh yeah, we didn't take into consideration that. And maybe it'll save you some time and some angst.
Naomi had wanted me to cover that slide, but the apps, the technology, that's all her, so I never interject in the middle. So we as a team were also very fortunate to be Serious Decisions customers, and they helped guide us through this whole process because we were not only implementing an ABM program, but also moving to their new demand unit waterfall. And their demand unit waterfall is basically defined as, you know, you've got a buying group that has needs that your product answers. And it's a buying group, not an individual. So if you think of the shift from marketing to an individual and an individual being a lead to, no, you need this group of people, and it's not just any group of people, it's these specific people, it's a big shift that you have to figure out. And they were hand in hand, lockstep with us every step of the way. So the old demand unit waterfall that we used to work with, marketing qualified leads, sales accepted leads, sales qualified lead, closed, hopefully won. We were in this model until we kind of made the shift. And we made the shift not just for ABM, but for our traditional demand gen too. So our whole campaigns and everything is measured and flowed through this type of a process. So the new demand unit waterfall, target demand for us is our total addressable market. So X number of accounts with X number of product opportunities within each, and that's our addressable market. Active demand is demand units that show intent in third-party sites. So, you know, they haven't come to Improvata yet, but we see intent for a given product with they're searching on keywords or they're reading content related to this given product. Engaged demand is where we see activity from our target personas, but they haven't hit the score threshold to be moved to prioritized. So prioritized demand is kind of one of our key metrics. That's where the old MQL came in, but prioritized demand is a group. The old MQL was a person. And we talk about prioritized demand as lifting a demand unit. So when they hit prioritized, they lift that demand unit to sales. Then qualified demand is when sales moves it to stage one or three. And pipeline is stage 4 to 6, and then hopefully again closed 1. So the complexity of trying to explain this to sales can't be understated. The funny part is that really it's just replicating what they were doing in the field, but they didn't have the systems or processes set up in the same manner that they were actually executing in the field. So in the old world, we would have campaign members, and the woman in the heels and the skirt, we'll call her Mary. Mary could be moved over as a lead in MQL because she scored 100 points. Our threshold is 100 points for lead scoring. In the new world, We can have all these campaign members, but Mary is not a key persona. So see her there with her 100 points, all fancy, but her 100 points don't count. They don't mean anything to us. So the key personas are the other three whose scores make up an opportunity. So it's those three people together that lift the demand unit and create a stage zero opportunity. Now, there's one exception to that rule. If Mary requests a meeting or a demo with Improvada, then that high value activity will actually move the demand unit up. So, you know, the best laid plans, this all worked perfectly in our heads, but there's some things that you learn along the way. So, you know, in the demand gen team, my team, we are looking at our programs differently. We still do, you know, webinars that will invite everybody who's relevant. But as we work with our vendor partners, we're looking for more targeted groups of people. And I actually had a couple conversations with different vendor partners in the marketplace here. And not only do we want targeted people, but we want exact people. Like, we don't want the people we already have in our database. And these partners can support a suppression list, you know, an encrypted suppression list, so that we're not getting those same people. We want net new people. So that's something that will be integrated, that is being integrated into our program mix. At the same time, we've got our biz dev team, the BDRs, SDRs, if you have them, I don't know what you call them, but they need leads. So, you know, they weren't really making that jump to account based with us. So they're still looking for activity. So we had to expose the campaign activity to them, which isn't where we wanted to be. Those are immature leads to us. They're not ready. But we are exposing them, and we're working more closely with them, and we're getting to a better spot. But because they're hunting in our immature lead space, what the impact is that it affects our scoring because they're bypassing that stage zero opportunity. So it's affecting our metrics, and we're working through exactly what to do there. And I will hand over to Naomi.
So, sorry. On the metrics front, you know, when it comes down to what Lynn was just talking about with the scoring model, for example, when the rep moves that engage stage opportunity, right, down to something that's sales qualified, in essence, they're telling us that that lead was ready, even though we didn't flip the score. So what we're doing is we're stepping back and looking at our scoring model and saying, we're looking at the types of things that they're pulling down and bypassing, and we're going to be increasing the value of those activities in the scoring model. So that's the kind of stuff that we're getting into now that we've seen it a little bit. So, I think part of what this conference does really well is they acknowledge some of the complexities in the B2B space, and you know, they encourage their speakers to talk about some of those complexities, because a lot of those complexities impact all of you, right? So here, I just wanted to quickly acknowledge that, you know, we have a long sales cycle. And that long sales cycle means you're flying blind without real data for 8 to 10 months after you launch something. That was really hard for us and super angsty for me, but it's just a reality of the situation. However, when you're in that journey, you can look at different metrics at different points, and you can still see if things are succeeding. So when we first launched our first ABM pilot, over a year ago now, I guess, we were looking at metrics like, can we see website visitors from accounts that are in our account-based selling and marketing program? And that's, if we saw a spike, we were happy. But now, you know, a year and plus later, what we are looking at is, where are the opportunities? Is there opportunity stage movement? What are the dollar signs? So we're looking at different metrics, but there are metrics available to you at different points in the journey. We struggled a lot with how many MQLs, how many people equals a new demand unit. I have some modeling here that I'll show you that we think we've kind of worked that out this year. 2018 was a little bit dicey from a goals perspective, but we think we've worked that out, and I'll walk you through that model. And then we have the added complexity, like probably a lot of you in Salesforce. We have a parent-child hierarchy. Hospitals are are all owned by a bigger hospital, the networks that Mark was talking about. So it gets complex when you have a child facility, a child hospital that can buy your product. You can have a parent facility that can buy your product. They can buy different products. So we had to take that all into account when dealing with our measurement. Not to mention that every one of those facilities could have a different CIO. And who is the key persona when you've got 15 CIOs in a particular network, right? So we had to take that into account too. You'll see that play out in some of this. So this is our reporting framework. It was actually kind of Mark's brainchild way back in the beginning when we were doing our whiteboarding. It was a way to organize our thoughts around the types of metrics we needed. So each column in this actually represents, say, 5 to 10 key metrics. It's a set of metrics that we produce for the different audiences down the left. So our ABM specialist or a person in ABM specialist role really needs to know if the strategy that the sales rep set matches the first and third party intent that we're seeing in the market. She needs that information in order to provide value to sales. She needs to be able to see what the persona coverage is in those accounts because she's managing those accounts along with the sales team member. Likewise, though, an SVP of sales or an RVP of sales, that person's really going to want to know about the velocity. What is their team doing with the stuff that's coming from marketing? Are they pushing it through? It's just a different set of metrics. So I don't have in this presentation the kind of outline of the 5 to 10 KPIs that go underneath each. It would be like eye candy. It would be so tiny you couldn't even see it. But if anybody's interested in it, more than happy to share it. It's something that we did work with Serious Decisions on. All of this modeling is areas where they provided feedback to us, and it does map to standard frameworks. So we're getting into real examples. This is our old report out versus our new. Old is on the left, new is on the right. It's blurry. You didn't drink too much last night. It's really blurry. But it's the OneSign MQLs, which are the old people or leads. They are now the prioritized stage zero opportunity leads, right? So we score opportunities. We move opportunities to sales. You'll see also that we brought in a new metric on the engaged stage. That is because of what Lynn was just talking about, where we have sales team members who are hunting in that stage. We need to know if we're giving them enough to hunt from, but also, two, are they impacting the stage zero number because they're plucking them out and pulling them down? So this we report out on this weekly. What I'm showing you here is just as a comparison to year to date, but in the spreadsheet, it just wouldn't fit on the slide. So there's a monthly report out, then we report out against quarter, and then we report out against year. So we look at January, then we look at February, Q1, and then et cetera. And it all comes out in this format. And it's in this format specifically because our teams were used to seeing it in this format, and we didn't want to rock the world out of the gates. So eventually we'll pull them into a dashboard. This is itty bitty, but I wanted to give you a sense for it is a real live working model. We tie everything back to business bookings goals. So we sit with finance. We know exactly what the bookings goals are for the organization. And then we back it out. And over here, the light blue and the green are the prioritized stage ops that we need and the engaged stage ops that we need. So we work up a set of variables. We know what's going on in the space. We know what engineering's developing for new products. So we know how much we can potentially bump sales there. We know if we've got new competitors in a space and we're going to struggle with selling a particular product. All of those variables are built into this model. And that's how we back out to getting some of our goals. The things you may want to keep in mind when building out a model like this is really the split between your inside and outside sales teams. They can often have different sales velocity cycles. They can have different deal sizes. You may want to take into consideration new versus add-on. If it's a new deal, it's typically a bigger price tag than if it's an add-on deal. And we break it out by sales team, region, product. We have quarterly breakouts. We know in Q2 and Q3 we need to pull in more than in other quarters, et cetera. What you'll notice is in that model or in this list of bullet points, there is absolutely no mention of an ABM aspect. So for this year, because we're about a year in our long sales cycles and we're starting to really see some data come through, we modeled it without an ABM slice. I cannot wait for 2020 because I think for 2020, what you'll see is another bullet point that the model will have more rows and it will then be broken out by this is the average deal size for ABM, this is the average velocity for ABM versus all the non-ABM counts, and how does that model out for us? That translates into a real focus for marketing. So we then back those original numbers out, and we back them out and break them out by team. So the events team, the web team, the demand gen team, et cetera. And then we back them out to campaign type. And so webinars, events, et cetera. That way, if we start to see number of stage zero opportunities dropping, and we can isolate it down to, oh, webinars aren't performing as well as they used to be, or the events team, oh, one of their major events got canceled this quarter, and that's why. We can come together as a management team and we can say, okay, well, if we need to bump webinars, then on the website, what can we do to promote webinars more? Or, hey, we've got an upcoming show. How can we promote webinars and get people in there? So we can come together as a management team and focus on driving our goals. I promise they're not all small charts. So now we're getting into, this is out of the box Salesforce. These are just Salesforce reports and Salesforce dashboards. There is some data integrity, there's some data work that happens on the backside to be able to complete or create good reports out of Salesforce. You guys probably all know this, but for example, we have really stringent rules, required fields around campaign type, channel, call to action, things like that, that the demand gen team and the events team, they have to use. That allows us to create these dashboards, which we can slice and dice. So this one, essentially, it's filtered down by demand gen so that someone on Lynn's team, for example, could see how many engage stage and how many prioritized stage opportunities she's generating in a given time period, and she can monitor their goals that way. This is an example of how what we thought we would measure morphed a little bit from what we are currently measuring. When we were doing our framework way back when we first were whiteboarding this out, we said, oh, we want to report on units, the number of ops, and dollar value of those ops. And then when the data started rolling in, we were like, oh no, those charts in the middle are empty. That's really bad. But what we didn't think through was for engaged stage and for prioritized stage, they're not qualified by sales yet. There's no dollar value associated with them, right? So we actually have to go back in and rip those charts out. I left them in for the purposes of this because that was a learning moment for us, right? It's not until they get into lower sales stages that you actually start to see dollar values. This is actually comes out of Wave. Wave is a data visualization tool. If you're a longtime Salesforce user, it has been called in the past Salesforce Analytics or Einstein Analytics. They've rebranded it as Wave, so it is a Salesforce tool. Essentially, this recreates the Serious Decisions Demand Unit waterfall and allows us to slice and dice this 50 different ways. You can't see them in this picture, but at the top, there's filters. We can slice it by product. We can slice it by ABM versus non-ABM account. We can slice it by region, geo, salesperson, close date, all that kind of stuff. And with a click of a button, this all kind of trickles out and gives us new numbers. Down the right-hand side, that's where we are current year to date. Down the left-hand side shows the movement for a given time frame. So in a given time frame, in this example, 1,455 opportunities now, not people, opportunities were moved into an engaged stage. So it allows us to monitor the health of our pipeline. You might be looking at this and saying, what the heck is going on in qualified demand? It's a little bulky over there. You've got this. You go 1,000, 3,000, 1,000. Another thing that this whole process brings to light are those places in your business where sometimes you don't make the best decisions, but they're the right decisions for the business. So we through the process, discovered that we allow our sales team to create multiple ops for the same product in the same account. So essentially, because of our customers' needs, they need to be able to run a pilot first because it's a long sales cycle, big ticket dollars, right? So run a pilot first. Then they have a separate quote for invoicing for product and hardware and software. Then they have another one for professional services. So because of that, we acknowledge that our qualified layer is always going to be a bump. It's always going to be bigger than the others. So it just it helps us understand the business better when we look at modeling it out this way. So this slide is specific to ABM. Some of the others were like broader, but we had filtering in there that you could actually, you know, filter it down to be ABM. So for us, we're pretty strict about what we get credit for considering ABM to be successful. One of those things is the account strategy that the salesperson set. So say a salesperson set a strategy for OneSign, which is our single sign-on product for hospitals. If they set that strategy to OneSign, but it's actually a Confirm ID deal that closes, we don't get credit for that as being a successful ABM initiative. It has to be, strategy has to match the deal that closes. Even though we've been working in that account, sales has been working in that account, it's just we're being really particular about that. For us, and again, we're starting to see, because of the long sales cycle, we're starting to see some of this data come in now, and we can't wait to see kind of what happens with the deals that have been in the pipe for 12, 18, 24 months, you know, the ones that are up in the $2.3, $2.4 million range kind of thing. We are seeing for ABM accounts versus our traditional marketing and traditional selling a shorter average deal cycle and a larger opportunity cost per opportunity for us. So, so far so good. And we're just kind of, as I mentioned, continuously watching this. This will be the last slide, and then I'm going to pass it back over to these guys. We start to look at persona coverage now, and this is something that was completely foreign to our model in the past. Mental note, don't hit your microphone. Don't talk with your hands. So we can now essentially look at all target our opportunities in our system and all the products we sell and the personas who should be there for us. And that's kind of the right-hand side of this, right? We should, based on the accounts we have in our system, be able to have roughly 3,200 chief compliance officers in our system. What we really have in the system is what's on the left, right? And we have 991. We know now we have a gap there, and now we can go out and run programs, and we can go out and work with the sales team. There's great healthcare databases in the space, so we have a gap there. We started looking at this from the perspective of every opportunity in every stage of the funnel, and when the data started rolling in, we noticed that we really just needed to look at the top, the ones that were in the marketing stages, so target, active, engage, and stage zero. Because once it enters sales stages, then they're updating the personas and making the personas more accurate to who's actually involved in the deal. So these numbers reflect the marketing personas. But we can look at the closed won deals, and we can do, I pulled some data a couple of weeks ago, like pulled the data on all the titles. We can then synthesize that title, like for the closed won deals, these are the titles that are now involved. Sales is telling us what those personas are. Maybe we need to go back and add some personas based on who's successfully being involved in a particular deal. So, it comes back to you.
Okay, so I'm going to jet through these next couple because we're getting short on time. But basically, our sales VP has a dictum that everything be in Salesforce. He doesn't want folks working outside of Salesforce, so our tools are integrated with Salesforce. And this is an Engageo report. So a salesperson, it's overwhelming all the different accounts they have. They can look in Salesforce, see an Engageo report, and see the activity that's going across their accounts so that they can prioritize. In addition, that they can go a level deeper and prioritize within a given account, because this information of campaign activity is exposed in Salesforce as well. And, you know, we had to do a lot of work working with sales on this new model, because like I said, they do this inherently in the sales, but now they have the tools to support it, and it, it's confusing for them. So we had to put new SLAs in place, tell them how to disposition. MQLs are not MQLs anymore. It's stage zero ops. And then we did expose those campaign members to them with the caveat that these are not mature leads. So don't come back and tell us that our leads are crap because these leads weren't really ready for you yet. So those were some of the things that we learned along the way that we had to integrate into the campaign.
Thank you, Lynn. So one interesting thing that we didn't anticipate was the fact that the whole sourcing, this is a marketing lead or sales lead, is going away. Because we work all together now. Sales and marketing define, hey, these are the accounts that we want to go after. So that was a great benefit. I mentioned at the beginning, automation versus manual, right? How does it fit in towards the tech stack that Naomi went over? And how do you want to scale this? Do you have the opportunity to actually get a larger team? Customers versus prospect. There's still work for us to do there. Our focus at the beginning was really towards prospects, new accounts. But what do you do with your messaging and how do you track specifically towards your existing customers? And then train, and retrain, making sure that everybody's aware is really important. So to wrap this up, sales collaboration, really important. You need to do this all steps along the way together with sales. This cannot be a marketing initiative. This needs to be a corporate initiative. Technology infrastructure, make sure that you understand what is your flow and then try to fit in the right pieces, the right technology that's going to help you to support you. Resources and timing. This is not ABM out of the box. It was a great mention. Somebody mentioned that to me. It doesn't exist. This is a real effort and marketing and sales and IT. You all need to work on that together. And then think about how do you want to measure all of this from the beginning. That's it. Thank you very much.